welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 55 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again today on this on the podcast. I'm going to have Tracy Wilson on, as usual. If you guys remember, I've wanted to get back sort of to the original format of the podcast where I had interesting guests and all the rest of that stuff on. And I did line up some guests, but I was unable to get those interviews recorded in time for this podcast because I'm already a week late. And it's just been we've had so much going on and had so much to do. It's just been a clown show for the last 3 weeks, 2 weeks, in fact, since I got back from SHOT Show. I actually fell ill. I went to the hospital with some crazy flu from Las Vegas, but luckily it was not coronavirus and they let me go, so I didn't get quarantined. Much to the chagrin of the anti-gunners, I'm out. I'm still circulating around society and still trying to cause them as many headaches as possible. The liberals probably aren't happy either. But nonetheless, I've got Tracy Wilson coming on, and we've got a lot to update you guys about. So a lot of really critical pieces of information that you probably should know, and also some just more information, some explanation on some of the stuff that's going on in our community as we speak. All right. So all that and more right after this.
Once you lose rights, it's nearly impossible to get them back. Right now, there are politicians and bureaucrats working day and night to eliminate your ability to own and use firearms in Canada. They're talking about not allowing you to keep your firearms at home and even taking away the ones you already have. It's not a joke. It's not an exaggeration. Activism is a lot of work, and most people don't have the time. But something that you can do is support the CCFR. For $40 a year, you can be a part of the hardest working firearm organization in Canada and get $5 million worth of insurance. The CCFR lobbies government and works to improve the public image of gun owners through media and educational campaigns. Protect your own ability to own and use firearms before it's too late. Go to firearmrights.ca and click Why Join. That's firearmrights.ca.
All right, on the Skype, I've got Tracy Wilson. She is back. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Ron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Awesome. So we've got a lot to talk about, and it's going to take a little while, so I want to go as quickly as possible.
Let's jump right into it.
Okay, first thing, let's talk about the event that we have going on this Tuesday, the Policy Talk event. Why don't you give us the rundown on that?
Yeah, so this is a really great initiative, and the idea here is we're going to have a talk about policy. Basically, the questions we're going to try and answer are, would a ban on firearms have any effect on crime? Like, what is the efficacy of a firearms ban? So if a firearms ban isn't going to work, then what will? So it's sort of a two-part question. I'm really excited. We've got some great speakers. Jordana Goldlist will be joining us. She's a criminal defense lawyer from the Toronto area. She actively works with these people, defending them in court. She mentors university students and street kids, and she's been helping develop some anti-gang initiatives. So she's going to have a lot to say about it. Also joining us would be Evelyn Fox. So a lot of people on our Twitter would know Evelyn. She is CZV416 on Twitter. And she lost her son through an act of senseless violence back in September of 2016. And, she's been sharing her experience going through the trauma of losing somebody, but has used it to launch a grassroots advocacy movement called Communities for Zero Violence. And she's been working with community members and stakeholders looking for meaningful ways to stop the roots of violence. Emily Brown's going to join us as well. She's great, actually. She's been a trap shooter and a gun owner for well over 40 years. She's involved with the Ontario Trap Shooting Association as well as the National Canadian Trap Shooting Association. She's a professor. She's been working a lot lately with the Canadian University Shooting Federation. So she's working with young people and, she's survived through every single layer of government bureaucracy as far as the licensing and registration regimes have, you know, are concerned. We've also got Allison DeGroote coming from the CSAAA. She's from the organization that represents the firearms manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. And she's got some really interesting insight on the economic impact of gun regulations, and in particular on gun bans, with, you know, $8.6 billion being contributed to the GDP every year in Canada from the firearm industry and the shooting sports. I think it's important to also have a look at what the impact would be on the economy. And then we've got Marcel Wilson coming. He's a great guy. This is a guy who is like one of the biggest gang leaders in Toronto. And he completely turned his life around. He founded an organization called the One by One Movement. He's been doing motivational speaking and working directly with youth outreach and anti, you know, gang strategies. And he's also a regional coordinator for the Against Violence, Extremism Network. So he deals a lot with working with people to get them out of gangs and extremism groups. And of course, the whole thing will be moderated by our favorite Brian Lilly. So Brian's, you know, he's got 20 years covering every single level of government in Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto. You know, he's pretty well known, and he's been putting out a lot of great material for a long time now on the firearms file. And he's going to help guide us through a conversation about, you know, is this going to work? And if not, then what will? I think it's important to keep our focus on finding solutions that will actually have a positive effect on public safety.
Awesome. So how do you find out about that and attend it if you, if you're in the GTA?
Well, we've got it on our Facebook page. You can also Google Policy Talk and you'll find it comes up there. There's an Eventbrite link. There is a small, you know, cost of $20. It's just to help recoup some of the costs of putting this thing together. If you've got any questions, you can email us at info@firearmrights.ca and we'd be happy to answer them. And it's being hosted at the Hart House in Toronto. So should be a great venue. There'll be snacks on hand. So I hope to see a lot of people come out. There'll be a really great Q&A period sort of after the panel discussion. And I think that'd be an opportunity for people to really have some of their concerns and their opinions and even their ideas heard by everybody. So, I think it's a great opportunity to really start looking at changing the course of this conversation and looking for real solutions instead of just political theater.
Well, it sounds awesome. Okay, so the next thing that I'll bring actually to the table is we launched our club outreach program. So basically the idea was through field officers and through CCFR members and through email and whatnot, we would reach out to every gun club in Canada and let them know about the work of the CCFR, let them know what we're planning, and see if we can't get more gun owners just into advocacy and standing up for their own, you know, ability to own and use firearms, as we like to say. And yeah. So I created a couple of videos. One was specifically for the clubs to appeal to them to share a member-only version of this video and to share that on their club newsletter or on their club social media, and just kind of push that message out there that there's new initiatives coming against us. The CCFR is working really hard and we could really use your support kind of thing. And a few clubs did, a few clubs responded. I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, and they responded in a great way, in a big way. So we truly appreciate all their help. And there's a few clubs still sending in donations. We didn't ask for donations, but some people have done that on their own. But I think now we have a list of 1,100 clubs across Canada. And we did hear from a few that they would not share our information and that they were too afraid of getting shut down by the government. So they don't want to get political, which is interesting, I guess, to some extent, because you're going to get shut down anyway, because when semi-autos go and the next round of attacks come against handguns, no one will have a reason to be part of your club anymore. You're going to go away. So nonetheless, I think out of the 1,100, I don't have a real number because we really don't know. But based on the reaction, I think about 30 or 40 may have shared our information. So, yeah, while that's kind of disappointing, you know, it is what it is. I think a lot of people, they just don't see the value in standing up for themselves. They don't think it's going to help, or I don't know, whatever the issue is. But the reason why I brought it up is, if you're listening to this and you have any sway at your gun club, maybe mention this to the executives and say, you know, hey, we'd really like you to share that information. And if they didn't get it, let us know at info@firearmrights.ca that you didn't get that email. You know, and let them know that you really want them to share that information and rally gun owners, because we need everybody. We really do need everybody pulling in the same direction, because we're going to lose everything. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that and give you guys kind of the status and what that was all about. Next thing.
Yeah, that's
good. Next thing. Interesting. So Bill Blair got roasted yesterday in question period, and mm-hmm. we have the clip of it. So I'm going to play that right now, and then Tracy and I are going to comment on it. So check this out.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Prime Minister said law enforcement officers cannot seize gun licenses. He is wrong. An RPL or PAL is invalidated when it's seized by police for public safety, and that person has no ability of law to possess or acquire any firearm. Will the Prime Minister now admit that Canada has long had legal options to seize firearms in public safety scenarios and apologize for misleading this House yesterday?
Mr. Speaker, let me be very clear. Red flag laws save lives. I have actually used those sections of the criminal code to seize firearms in these dangerous situations. And I can also advise you, Mr. Speaker, of the limitations of those laws. Mr. Speaker, we know that the average assaulted woman in Canada is assaulted 25 times in a domestic relationship before the police are in fact called. 70% of firearm deaths in this country are suicides. And we know that there are people exploiting violence and hatred against visible minorities. Mr. Speaker, these laws will empower Canadians to take action to render a dangerous situation, a potentially deadly situation, safe.
Honorable député.
The Honourable Member for Bellechasse et Chemin-Lévis. Mr. Speaker, the Minister should apply the existing rules, because apparently he's not familiar with the law. The law is already clear. Police can suspend a firearms license, and they can prevent someone who has mental health issues or links to crime from acquiring a firearm in the first place. The law is clear, so nothing needs to be changed. Why attack honest citizens instead of tackling the real problem, street gangs?
For public safety.
Mr. Speaker, anyone who suggests in the face of the constant threat that women in abusive relationships face from the potential of firearms in the home, the individuals who lose their life to suicide, for anyone to suggest nothing needs to be done, Mr. Speaker, is unconscionable. Mr. Speaker, red flag laws have overwhelmingly proven their effectiveness because they empower more than just the limited authority of the police, but they give victims, families, teachers, doctors, elders, the opportunity to intervene and to keep people safe.
I know some of us in the House have short memories, but the way it works is you ask a question and then you get an answer. Whether you like the answer is irrelevant, but you shouldn't be shouting back and forth while the answer is being given or while the question is being asked. I just want to remind everyone, just in case they forgot that principle. The Honourable Member for Medicine Hat, Carson Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, if you recall, I rose to point out that the Prime Minister was misleading Canadians on firearms.
That's right.
Public safety should not be a political game. Absolutely. It is our duty in this House to get the facts right to protect Canadians. The current law is very clear. If a firearm owner poses a threat, authorities can confiscate firearms and suspend licenses, preventing further purchases of firearms or possession. If our public safety minister actually had a PAL or an RPL, he'd already know this instead of trying to develop what he's doing. Mr. Speaker, will the Prime Minister rise, apologize, and correct the record?
Minister for Public Safety.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I will admit I'm not a recreational firearm user, but I have actually enforced and used these laws to keep communities and people safe. And what I can tell you, the authority that exists in law...
Really good.
Okay. Please continue.
The laws that are currently available that enable law enforcement to seize firearms and to revoke license are limited in their application, Mr. Speaker. And it is only in the circumstances where reasonable probable grounds exist and only in circumstances where a seizure of a firearm has taken place that a firearm can be revoked. And the practical application of that, Mr. Speaker, is that until there's been a return to a justice and that information is conveyed to the, to the chief firearms officer, that license can be revoked.
Okay, well, it looks like Bill Blair got roasted. In fact, it looks like he admitted to himself that the police have all the tools that they need, and that he himself have deployed these tools to take guns out of dangerous situations, and at the same time undermine himself. Hey,
well, it's funny because he sort of talked himself right around in a circle. He said, "We need these red flag laws. They save lives. Women are in jeopardy. You know, we must have the ability to remove firearms from dangerous people." And then, of course, people, you know, the opposition stands up and says, well, actually, we do have that. And there were some quotes of the sections and what's already in place. And Bill, you know, they were almost taunting him a little bit for not knowing the law. I believe it was Steve Blaney said, you know, maybe if you had taken your course, you would know a little more about the regulations. And then Bill says, well, I know all about these. In fact, I've deployed them over my career. So which is it, Bill? We need these, or, you know, we need these laws in place, or they're already in place and you've used them. He talked himself in a complete circle.
Well, and he does that often, right? He talked himself into a complete circle when we were sitting there with him, when we, mm-hmm. we confronted him with the camera crew and everything. And he was, you know, asleep at the wheel enough to agree to that. And, you know, we've sat across from Bill Blair, and Bill Blair he's just someone that will do whatever it takes to maintain his position. And that, you know, includes up to anything like that.
Yeah,
that guy
anything.
Will do literally anything. And when I say anything, use your imagination about what people in governments have done throughout human history, what kind of terrible things that they're capable of. Bill Blair is someone that will literally do anything to maintain his position, to be walk the halls of power, sit at the big table, be immune from the law himself, literally do anything. And so in this case, including use Americanized terms like red flag laws. The term red flag law has never been used in Canada before the last month. So again, always invoking the United States, always just so deceptive. It's really incredible. And of course, wanting to leverage women that are abused. And interestingly enough, apparently it's all gun owners' fault that women are being abused, obviously, because we need more rules on people that would hold a license, right? Not women's shelters, not education campaigns, not other laws and resources to pull women out of those situations. Don't forget all that. Just more laws that already exist, and definitely call them something American. But the part that really bothered me was, you know, he knows what the problem is. And he also highlights, most women that are abused get abused 25 times before they even report it. Don't you think that's a problem? Don't you think that's what's driving the problem? So I don't know.
It's offensive to me too, because I think about that, and he's right. A lot of domestic violence does go unreported, or it goes on for years and years before the woman, has the ability to get herself out of that situation. So shouldn't that be the focus? If it's really about saving women's lives, if it's really about pulling women out of these terrible situations, then shouldn't we be focusing on that, making it easier, giving them the supports they need to come forward and make a change, positive change in their lives? It boggles my mind the fact that he uses women in this, and at the same time, it's not like women are going to be exempt from his crazy gun bans or anything else, right? He's also disarming women. So I think, you know, it's just disingenuous. And StatsCan actually provides the information that we need. And less than 1% of all domestic violence calls in Canada even have a firearm at the address at the address, let alone used or threatened in any manner. So, you know, I also would like to see an end to women, you know, feeling afraid or being abused in situations, but disarming millions of Canadians is not the answer to a very clear problem.
Well, I'm blaming gun owners, right? It's right. Gun owners' fault, right? And you know, as a gun owner myself, I can't control whether, you know, you have some guy and you know, I'm going to speak plainly, some scumbag that's abusing his wife or his girlfriend or his significant other. And I can't, and as a gun owner, I don't have control over that woman putting up with that abuse and being abused 25 times and not reporting it. Like, I don't have control over that. So anyway, more absolutely useless BS from the Liberal Party, like absolutely useless BS to fool Canadians into thinking that they're doing something. It's, I mean, if I was a Liberal voter, I would be offended. I'd be like, well, what are you doing? You know, the overwhelming majority of the problem is when it comes to firearm-related homicide or gangs. You've done nothing but say that you're smearing money on the problem. And then when it comes to suicide, you're like, well, people are killing themselves with guns. So obviously no one can own a gun. You know, the oversimplification, I could go on for an hour, but anyway, I'm going to try to wrap it up, right? It's the oversimplification that drives me crazy. When it comes to suicides, it's like, okay, well, out of those anywhere from 700 to 1,000 people, depending on the year, that kill themselves with firearms, sometimes as low as 500, out of all those people, how many of those people were terminally ill and they you know, they didn't want to suffer and die in a hospital? Mm-hmm. Out of all those people, how many, you know, it's not simple. There's a lot of reasons why people take their own lives. And sometimes, you know what, it's their right to do it. Sometimes they're people that just need help and that wouldn't do it otherwise. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, let's have a reasonable discussion about these things. But this oversimplification that because a small group of people out of the 2.2 million that legally hold firearms take their lives with guns that nobody can own them, it is just, it's completely absurd. But this is the absurdity of these horrible people that leverage the suffering of others to score political points because they have a minority government. But anyway, next thing let's talk about real quick is Airbnb giving our political adversaries, spin doctors for protection from guns, $300,000 over 3 years.
So all around the world, Airbnb has been in hot water because, you know, this is more or less an unregulated industry, right? You've got these, it's people buying homes. It's actually become a phenomenon here in Canada where people are buying homes and properties and condos and whatnot in order to make a huge profit. If you're renting it to a tenant by the month on a, you know, a 1 year lease, there's a certain amount of profit you're going to make there over and above what you have for a mortgage payment. However, if you're renting it out by the night or, you know, a 3 day stay, you think about how much money you can make, right? Charging what a hotel would charge to stay. So of course it's a very lucrative business and that's why people want to do it. More and more people are doing it. And I know in Toronto, especially there's actually a lawsuit right now between Airbnb and the city of Toronto, because Toronto's trying to further regulate Airbnb and, you know, due to the level of violence that's being perpetuated at their short-term rental locations, that, you know, it culminated up last week when there was a violent situation. They had some young gang members who had rented a condo in a high-rise building. Of course, violence broke out. There was 5 victims in all. 3 of them died. 2 of them had other injuries. And the answer to all of this and the bad press that Airbnb is getting because of their loose regulations around short-term rentals is, of course, they want to throw some money at the problem. Well, obviously, they hadn't done their homework on who they were donating to, because the Doctors for Protection from Guns don't advocate against violence or gang crimes or that type of thing, which is exactly the problem. They only advocate against legal gun ownership. So I think they've been led down the fairy trail here, and they've made a bad decision. And of course, the uprising of objection to this on social media is just wild. The ratio on Twitter is like something I've never seen. And of course, there, you know, you've got celebrities speaking up. Now, Colleen Noir from the NRA actually retweeted Airbnb's tweet about this. And it's grown ever since then. That was last night, and it's totally out of control. So I think it's, you know, just a bad decision. And at the same time, there's the entire fiasco of a group that accuses groups like ours, Canadian Doctors for Protection from Guns, often accuse us of being, you know, U.S. style or American influenced or NRA North or, you know, this kind of rhetoric. They're talking about us like that. And here they are accepting huge donations from corporate America, like hush money, to be quiet about the gang violence that's being perpetuated at their locations. And yet, you know, they're more than happy to accept that money, right?
Well, that's their MO. It's always accuse everybody else of exactly what it is you're doing. So, yeah. You know, they ended up with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of free advertising work from a firm that whose client list is overwhelmingly large pharma, big pharma. So yeah. they're absolute flaming hypocrites, those people. And it's easy to see. And you look down their Twitter feed and it's one long list of denial. You know, it's like, no, we're not doing any of this stuff when they actually demonstrably are. And it's everybody else doing what we, you know, what we're actually doing. And, you know, I was actually trying to clean up my desktop because everything I do, I throw on my desktop. So my desktop is full of icons and there's a bunch of tweets that I saved. And one of my favorites, I looked, I'm like, oh, geez, I remember that one, was when the election was coming up and the spin docs for protection from guns were, well, it's really Christopher Hallcroft there, addled PR guy. But and who's paying his bill? It's probably $120,000 a year. Somebody's funding these guys hardcore, but you know, they'll never reveal that. They're not even a registered not-for-profit. So something funny is going on with their group. But nonetheless, he tweeted out that they were really afraid that there was gonna be violence from gun owners on election day. You know, these people are like never Trumpers, right? They're like, he's never going to leave the White House. He's going to take over. It's going to be a coup. And it's like, holy man, you guys need to leave the tinfoil on the roll. But anyway, doesn't belong in your head. That's not what it was ever meant for. All right. Well, let's Airbnb are going to, you know, it's funny because Airbnb react just like the Liberal Party and just like the spin docs and just like everybody else. Basically, we have a problem. We'll take precisely no steps to solve our problem. We'll just throw some money around and this will all go away. Just sickening, these people. But nonetheless, all right, we've got two things left. Let's talk really quick about Ducks Unlimited. You know, and let's make this as brief as possible, but why don't you start with that?
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking about the parliamentary petition E2341, which is, you know, now the largest in Canadian parliamentary petition history. It's the most signed petition we've got. And I thought, you know, we've got to get this word out beyond sports shooters. I'd really like to see, you know, people from the entire community get together behind this, this initiative. So I took it upon myself to start emailing and reaching out and calling our advocacy partners from coast to coast. So I'm talking about provincial wildlife federations, I'm talking about hunting organizations, you know, sports shooting, cowboy action, like everybody. I emailed everybody and anybody I could find an email address for. And, you know, the response was amazing. And it was really great to see people sharing it out there. This isn't a gun petition. This isn't a hunting petition. This is a petition asking government to respect due parliamentary process. So I think it should be a pretty easy sell, right? And unfortunately, Ducks Unlimited responded back to me saying that they would not share the petition. They've got their reasons. They were very clear that their mandate is to protect conservation and wetlands, and they are neither a hunting organization nor a firearms organization. So, of course, this, you know, sort of erupted in a little bit of a firestorm on social media, which was not my intention. You know, at this time, I don't think division is what we need. I think we do need to be united. And that was sort of my message when I spoke with them. And the reason for my, you know, reaching out to every single organization I could get my hands on. And overwhelmingly, I think the response from organizations across this nation was overwhelmingly positive. But yeah, not so much with this one. So,
yeah. Well, I just got caught up with you on this whole thing because it wasn't my issue, and I have to really limit what I get involved in because I have to get work done. But you kind of briefed me on this whole thing. We looked at some of the messaging that we put out there. And my read on it is that Ducks Unlimited, they made a decision. It was contrary to the way that most people viewed their organization. I mean, they give away guns all the time. They cater to hunters left and right. You know, one of their guys sits on the firearms advisory committee. If they have nothing to do with firearms, what the hell is he doing on there?
Right.
So everything that they've said is contrary to what their position is. They're worried about their government funding, and I get that, and that's fine. And I think what the situation is that their leadership they're not familiar with the political aspect. We saw this with Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Toronto, right? Where these people are kind of dragged into this political sphere, which is really sensitive and takes a long time to really understand that the dynamics involved there and how badly it can affect you. And I think they just found themselves in that situation and they're thrashing around trying to mitigate the damage. So is it the CCFR's intention to hurt Ducks Unlimited? No. Certainly we're disappointed that they can't, you know, share the petition or thought that there was no value in it or they were afraid of it or whatever, but it's not even a gun petition, right? It's a democratic process petition. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't want to hurt them. That's not the whole point of anything. Although, you know, people are accountable for the position they take and whatever that fallout is what it is. But, we definitely don't want our members to hurt them or to follow them around or to troll them or what have you. But, you know, when it comes to Ducks Unlimited, it is what it is. They're saying that they're conservation, not firearms. So that's, you know, may seem like a complex situation, but I don't think it's any more complex than that.
That's right. And at this point, I think there's, you know, they do a lot of valuable work on the environmental file. And at this point, I think it's better if everybody just moves on. Let's concentrate on getting our ranges and everybody else across the country to share this petition. It's open for just a short time more, and I'd love to see us reach 250,000 signatures. So,
yeah, we're getting pretty close. While we're talking, I'm just gonna whip over there.
Yeah.
E2341.ca. E2341.ca is the easiest way to get there.
Yep.
158,877 signatures, and there's probably 20,000 sitting there unconfirmed, I would imagine. But definitely it closes on the 15th. So that only gives us another 8 days. I think we have time for one more big push. Again, kind of almost going back to our club outreach program. Talk to your clubs, ask them to send a notice out again one more time. Make sure that they have the proper instructions. Sign the petition and then stand by and wait for that confirmation email to come. Check your junk mail folder, check your spam folder, make sure that you confirm that email or your signature won't count. So go out to your clubs. If you're part of a union, implore your union to send that out with detailed instructions, because we don't need more people to sign it and then not confirm. But it's really important that we do one last push. I'd love to see 200,000. And the anti-gunners, the best they ever did was 20,110, even with bus, I've said this before, right? With bus bench advertising in Cineplex Odeon theaters, probably free advertising. The Toronto Transit Authority has given free advertising to the docks, the spin docks. City Hall has given them free rein, you know, has helped them, you know, immeasurably. And that's the best they could do is 20,000. So this whole idea that Canadians overwhelmingly want to ban is total BS. It's total garbage. You know, and some ECOS, you know, liberal funded poll is not, you know, I don't consider that the pulse of the nation. So anyway, one last push for this petition, we can do it. And thanks to everybody who signed it, so far. I don't know that we have anything else, Wilson.
Okay, well, that's it. I hope to see everybody in the GTA or at the event on Tuesday with Brian Lilly. Make sure you go to our social media. You can find the link for that. And keep signing and sharing that petition. Let's give it another solid shove.
That's right. And make sure that you ask your clubs to share our information. And, you know, maybe push them a little bit. A lot of people don't want to get involved, but the CCFR is doing a lot of great work. We're working ourselves to death here. We're growing.
we're doing big things, and we're doing things every single day. So would really, really appreciate your support on that. So try to get your clubs involved and get them to share that that information that we sent them. All right, well, let's wrap this up, and I'll come back, do a sign off, and that'll be it for this episode. Thanks for coming on, Tracy.
Nice talking to you, Rod.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 55 of the CCFR Radio podcast. Thanks to Tracy Wilson for coming on and all her work. And thanks to all of you for supporting us. A couple of things I'd like to say before I wrap it up is try to get your gun club involved. Get them to resend out the CCFR newsletter to your membership. Try to get them to share those videos that I mentioned before. You can find those on the CCFR YouTube channel. Just try to get them to send out information about the petition. We're running out of time. We want to get to 200,000, which would be nice. Make it such a huge petition that nobody could ever keep up with it. Nobody could ever catch up with it, I should say. So that would all be really great for our community. And again, if you're not a member of the CCFR, please consider becoming a member. You can go to firearmrights.ca and do that, or you can donate, or you can become a CCFR insider by supporting us on Patreon for $20 a month or more. Don't forget, that's US dollars. So it's like, I don't know, $45 Canadian pesos. But nonetheless, if you want to support us in any of those ways, I truly appreciate your support. And we are working ourselves to death over here, doing everything we possibly can to hold these people off, at least try to make it to another election. That's the best we can do for now. So again, hopefully you enjoyed the podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will see you all soon.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.